it's also become the case that many things that seem to be out of bounds or anomalous behavior, in fact, aren't. And so you're flooded with false positives anytime you have these pure rules-based systems in place. And that's kind of what necessitated the invention of AI ops, that you're basically trying to get the machines to do as much work as possible and get it off of the human brains. You're trying to automate things that can be automated. It's that simple.
We're going through something absolutely historic.
Technologies across the board are growing exponentially.
It's a disruption that's going to completely redefine the way businesses compete.
In the next decade, we're going to lose 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies.
The exponential growth of computing is continuing.
AI is nowhere near its full potential.
Whether you like it or not, that the future cannot be stopped by anyone.
Hi there, everybody. This is Mark Verbenkov, and welcome back to the Future Tech and Foresight podcast. This is episode number 126. So today's episode, even though we are, of course, going to be getting into artificial intelligence, the surrounding subject is a little bit different than previous episodes, as it deals with something that's a little bit more of a legacy technology, specifically IT infrastructure. And I think that it's pretty obvious, living for anybody who's lived over the last 3 years or so, that the adoption and use of digital tools has, of course, exploded. But I thought it'd be interesting to start the episode off with a little stats to kind of put this into perspective. So global IT spending reached about $3.8 trillion back in 2021, marking a 4% increase from the previous year. And Gartner actually points out that 10.8%, or there was a 10.8% rise in enterprise software specifically that occurred during the same time frame. So it's becoming pretty evident that the backbone of any successful business really rests on efficient IT operations. And as somebody who started a business around 5-6 months ago, the amount of IT and digital tools that I'm using is pretty crazy, not to mention the AI and kind of more advanced tools that I'm using as well. And I think that these ideas taken together kind of lead us perfectly into the main topic of today. So as we're seeing this complexity of IT ecosystems grow, teams actually become pretty often overwhelmed by all of these complexities, and it leads to longer downtimes, inefficiencies, and ultimately frustrated end users. So this is where AI ops enters. This is artificial intelligence for IT operations. This was really born from the need to streamline and enhance IT operations. And coupled with this massive boom in the hype and the use of AI, specifically over the last year or so with ChatGPT and all the other tools that have come out, AI ops has rapidly become the go-to solution for managing today's multifaceted IT environments. So really, from its inception to modern day relevance, today we'll really dive into the world of AI ops, understanding its challenges, evolution, and future prospects, especially in the wake of, as I've already mentioned, breakthroughs like generative AI. So to help us decode this interesting sector, I'm thrilled to have on board an expert in the field, Trent Fitz. So Trent is a veteran with over 2 decades of leadership in the realms of cloud computing, AI, and cybersecurity. As a chief product officer at Zenos, Trent oversees both product strategy and global marketing. His extensive career portfolio boasts pivotal roles at trailblazing firms like Nimbox, SailPoint Technologies, which was acquired by Thoma Bravo, and TrustWave, later secured by Singtel. Beyond these ventures, he has provided invaluable insights in product strategy and business development through his consulting practice. And Trent's foundation is rooted in a computer engineering degree from the University of Oklahoma. So we really focus on AI ops today. We discuss what it is, the challenges, the evolution, and the future of it. And I hope that for any of you who haven't heard about AI ops before, you kind of get intrigued by this conversation. It was also really interesting to hear kind of the scope and magnitude of how not just AI, but also the IT ecosystems that are already out there today actually are.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Trent, for coming onto the podcast today to talk about how AI is impacting IT operations. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this, because I don't know all that much about IT operations, but I'm always interested to learn what interesting guests have to say on the subjects.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate being here.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned before, I like asking my guests what brought them into the industry that they're working in, right? So what initially got you interested in, say, AI or IT, whichever one came first for you?
So my degree is in computer engineering. It was a couple of years ago. We don't have to go into how many years ago, but my senior project was working with a Motorola microcontroller that was one of the first of its kind to have AI capabilities built into it. And so there was a design contest that we entered, and it was really from that time that I got hooked on the idea of AI. And of course, at that time, it wasn't anywhere near as mature as it is today, but I got into network architecture. And, you know, as you work with these systems and see them evolve over time, you just can really appreciate the complexity of what is built into the systems and how much they mature. And it's an obvious conclusion that some better way to do things was needed over the way that they've traditionally been done. I think the way that humans manage these systems evolved kind of linearly, while the complexity of these systems matured in a more exponential way. And so, you know, AI seems like an obvious conclusion. And it's really only been in the past, you know, 5 years or so that this has become a reality.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's kind of my sense, how these larger, I guess, IT infrastructures are being set up in these larger organizations. I think whether I've been lucky or unfortunate depends on the person's perspective. But I've really only worked for smaller organizations throughout my professional career. And even in the smaller organizations, up to like 50, 70 people, the kind of IT infrastructure is already chaotic. And especially if these companies are growing quickly, right, from a smaller team to, you know, 50 people over a couple of years, it's a little bit insane. So I can only imagine what it's like for these larger corporations. And as you said, if the things are growing kind of exponentially, while the skills are or the infrastructure is growing linearly, but the complexity is exponential, I can only imagine what it's like for these larger organizations.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, you know, 20 years ago, server virtualization was a thing, and so now it's no longer the case that this server exists on this piece of hardware necessarily, that it can move to other pieces of hardware. They're simply tracking that. And then, you know, cut to today, where we're dealing with ephemeral systems like containers and serverless offerings. You know, some of the companies that you're talking about, the small companies, they start out cloud native, and it's chaos from the beginning. And harder to, you know, get insights into those systems. And so we've absolutely come a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm curious to hear what else you have to say on this. So we're going to touch on something or focus on something called AI ops throughout the discussion. So why don't we start off with the definition of what it is, and then we'll get into like how that kind of evolves out of from the IT infrastructure.
Yeah. So the industry analyst firm Gartner is given credit for coining the term AI ops. Interestingly, the original meaning of it was algorithmic IT operations. However, you can't fight the hordes of people who see an acronym that starts with AI and assume that it means artificial intelligence.
Right.
And so they actually changed the meaning of the acronym. But, you know, in the beginning, when they created this category of things, it was very loosely defined. And it was something along the lines of applying artificial intelligence to massive sets of data to derive insights and accelerate problem resolution in IT environments. And so anybody that could squint an eye and say that they were doing that, they started saying AI ops, and it mm-hmm. just became a scenario, you know, over the past, I'd say 3 to 5 years, that it's kind of like the answer is AI ops. Now what's the question? And, right. You know, I think that the analyst community saw that the what was needed was some way to better analyze all of this data to derive insights through computation and not relying on human brains to do this. It's just a truth that I don't think anybody would dispute, that things have become so complex that it's beyond what human beings can manage without some kind of artificial intelligence.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think most people are coming to that kind of realization now, whether, you know, outside of IT or in just kind of like general business, or even in sometimes in your personal lives, if things get too complex, right? There's this organic need for AI to help sift through all of this, whether it's data or tools or just general complexity. It kind of makes intuitive sense that AI would be one of these tools to help clear up or simplify a lot of the things that we're working with. Why don't we talk about some of the challenges then from IT? So you've laid out kind of in a general high level, there's complexity, but if we can dive down into what some of these challenges are, like what are these complexities when we're looking at IT infrastructures?
Yeah, so I think the best way to start that answer is talking about the evolution of, you know, how it was to what we have with AI ops now. And you know, what we had, AI ops, you know, at the highest level is an evolution of monitoring, of IT monitoring. And so in infrastructure and operations, you know, monitoring tools have been around for decades. And, you know, in the beginning, it was basically monitoring servers, monitoring network gear, monitoring storage. And it's basically, is this thing up or down? And if it's down, then I need to have a person go do something about it. Over time, over decades, monitoring capabilities have greatly advanced. But there's still a rules-based nature to it. It is people writing rules that say, if this thing happens, then send me alert. Or if this thing happens, tell me what systems may be affected. It can be more complex. If this server is experiencing a memory shortage, what applications will that affect? And so it's evolved quite a bit, but it's still a rules-based system when you're just looking at traditional IT monitoring. And the problems, if it's not obvious with this, is things have gotten so complex and dynamic, it's impossible to write enough rules to cover everything. And it's also become the case that many things that seem to be out of bounds or anomalous behavior, in fact, aren't. And so you're flooded with false positives anytime you have these pure rules-based systems in place. And that's kind of what necessitated the invention of AI ops, that you're basically trying to get the machines to do as much work as possible and get it off of the human brains. You're trying to automate things that can be automated. It's that simple. And so this evolution of IT monitoring to AI ops, they're in this whole monitoring evolution, what has become the case in almost every single organization of any, you know, medium or large size, is that they adopt these monitoring tools, and somebody buys servers and they get a server monitoring tool. Somebody's running databases, there's a database monitoring tool. What is commonly the case is that organizations will have 30 or 40 different monitoring tools. This leads to silos of data, so you can't connect, you know, a problem in one area with the impact that it's having in another area. It's very difficult. It became virtually impossible to root cause problems. And so when you get out of that straightforward IT environment and into the dynamic, complex nature of today's environments, you had to have a way to get past the rules-based part of it. And so you're dealing with monitoring tool sprawl, data in silos, when there is a problem, usually you get a room of people together. Let's get the network team in and let's get the server team in. And they have a term that they use. It's called everybody's looking for the mean time to innocence, which is it's not me, it's you. The actual term is MTTR, mean time to resolve an issue. But, you know, it is often human nature, the case to say it's not our stuff, it's your stuff. And so that's really why AI ops came about, was to address the problem of monitoring tool sprawl, which led to the inability to root cause problems. And so it's interesting how the initial version of this came, you know, manifested itself. The vendors that started saying, hey, we sell AI ops, they originally messaged themselves as being event correlation for IT operations. And so this is a very old concept from the security world. There is a technology called SIEM that is basically correlating events from all of the systems in an environment to try to find security problems. They simply took this and applied it to IT operations. And so the answer was, let's don't address the problem of the monitoring tool sprawl. Let's put a layer on top of that. And now you've got 30 or 40 monitoring tools. Send those events from those tools to the AI ops platform. It will do this event correlation and magically produce insights. And what turned out to be the case is we're not there yet. You can't just throw data at algorithms and expect the algorithms to magically produce insights. And so this initial pass at AI ops, which is recognized as the generation one AI ops tools, they largely failed. And it just became the case, you know, there were multiple problems. The number one problem is there simply isn't enough context for algorithms to say, yes, this thing that happened over here caused this problem over here. There's not enough context. There's no notion of topology, how things are connected in the infrastructure. You're just throwing data at algorithms. And companies were employing teams of data scientists to try to tune the algorithms. And it became well understood that what you needed was these people who were experts in data science, and they were also experts in IT operations. Mm. And there aren't very many people like that in the world. And so, but that's not a failure. It was an opening for, other companies to iterate on this. And so the next version of this, the generation two AI ops tools, they were monitoring vendors that said, hey, we're capturing all of this data. We have all of the metrics, we have logs, we have traces, we have the events. And importantly, we have the topology. We are able to connect how these things are related in the infrastructure, that this server talks to this database, talks to this authentication system, uses this load balancer, uses this hyperconverged infrastructure. Part of it's on-prem, part of it's in the cloud. It's just crazy complex. Now you can take all of that data that you're getting from the monitoring tool and simply then use the backend part of AI ops, which is now apply machine learning to derive more precise insights from that. Hmm. That was a very long answer. I'm going to pause.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. I mean, you just kind of touched on it now, but I think it's always good for people listening to have maybe a bit of a more tangible understanding of what we're talking about. So if you just talked about like servers talking to databases, et cetera, but could you maybe I know that you work in this, obviously. So could you give like an interesting example to make this a little bit clearer for people listening?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the beginning, which is in the old days, you need an application. Let's just even say you have a website. You're not even selling anything. Perfect. You just have a website. And so you have an application, a web application that needs to run somewhere. You install that on a server. That server may need to be connected to a storage, some storage network or storage array, where it has access to more storage than can fit on that server. So you've got an application on a server that's connected to some kind of storage, external storage, and then it has to communicate over a network. You've got a switch and a router that goes out to the internet, and that's basically your infrastructure. Mm. Traffic comes in through a router. It goes maybe through switches. It goes to the server. The server may talk to the storage. And the application is running on that server. It's a handful of things, and they're static. That's critical to understand here. They're like that all the time. That website is sitting on that physical right. piece of hardware. If the website stops responding, somebody could walk into the server room and look at the server and make sure it's plugged in. So cut to today, this is simply no longer the case. Not only are servers virtualized, networking can be virtualized. So the traffic that goes through some path in a given minute, you know, 2 minutes later, maybe going through a different path, maybe routed a different way. A virtual server that's sitting on a physical piece of hardware could be there 1 minute and on another piece of hardware the next minute. These things are moving around. And then when you introduce ephemeral systems, most people developing new applications are doing it with containers and microservices. This takes an application that's a big chunk of thing, and it breaks it up into hundreds or thousands of parts. Mm. It simply makes it utilizes the machine resources more efficiently. And as you scale the way things must scale today, you kind of have to build your applications this way. It means many, many more smaller chunks, and they're all, many of them are dynamic. Things are changing minute by minute or second by second. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what people are dealing with today. Okay. So when you look at AI ops, if you look at a traditional monitoring system or the way they were before, it's impossible to monitor the second environment that I described. You need some ability to ingest just masses and masses of data, and you leverage machines to compute what is what at any given time.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So then how would this truly benefit an organization? Right. So apart from the kind of funny example that you gave where everybody kind of comes into a room and they're all kind of pointing the finger to everywhere else. How does it really help an organization in kind of a real sense?
Yeah. So it as we've been talking about, the number one thing that it is enabling is more immediate root cause analysis. Mm-hmm. That this may be, especially for non-technical people, it may be hard to imagine this, but something can be broken in a company's IT environment and they can't figure out what it is. It can take right. days or it can take weeks to figure out what it is. There are abundant examples of, you know, I'll use an airline. There was an airline whose ticketing system was down for 2 or 3 days, cost them tens of millions of dollars. And it was all due to a problem with a piece of networking gear. And they were unable to pinpoint where the problem was. They just knew mm-hmm. something was broken. And so as they're you're trying to go through the infrastructure and sleuth out the problem, but things are changing. They're dynamic the entire time. This is commonplace. If you ask IT operations professionals, you know, if you guys have an outage, how long does it take you to root cause the problem? It's often days. Hmm. And so AI ops is making huge advancements in that, the ability to immediately root cause problems.
Right. So the theoretical downtime of 2 to 3 days could be shortened to a day or
minutes.
Fascinating.
So, you know, in this continuum of, again, if for the non-technical people or the non-IT operations people, there's a set of MTT acronyms. MTTRs mean time to resolve an issue. That's end to end. The issue happened and this is when it was resolved. There's a part of that that's called the mean time to know. And that's a huge chunk of it, even knowing what the problem is. So you identify there is a problem, and then knowing what that problem is or root causing that problem is the biggest part of resolving it. Going and fixing it, that's usually a trivial endeavor. Understanding what the problem is non-trivial completely.
And I can only assume that this is relevant for kind of every industry today, right? Because every industry is using some sort of IT infrastructure, has, you know, their own type of apps and tools that they're using. So this kind of spans the globe entirely, or at least the advanced, you know, kind of modern first world globe.
100%. And it's not only that every organization leverages IT, it's actually that almost every company has become a technology company. They're building their own applications. They're not just relying on IT to do business. IT is their business. And you know, that goes from financial services, and just imagine any company in your life that you interact with. It can be banking. It can also be the grocery store. They are leveraging mass quantities of data to improve their own businesses, and the organizations who are not doing that are being left behind. And so it's not just that everybody needs IT, it's that every company has become an IT company.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd be very curious to hear in, like, let's say 10 years or so, if there's some sort of report where it shows AI ops has been implemented in so many industries. And this, as you're describing, like, let's say 5 days or 3 to 5 days of downtime due to some IT issue, AI ops comes in and it's only 3 seconds. Like, just a tremendous savings across all businesses, all industries, and all society. It sounds really profound, actually, the amount of savings, benefits, and I guess continuing operations of a business would be pretty tremendous.
You know, this is a great point. It's something that is true not only in AI ops, not only in IT operations, but, you know, I've been doing this for a number of years now, and one of the things that I'm pretty adamant about when I'm building a product is you need to show the customer the value that they're getting out of your product. Yes. And it can't just be the perception, because perceptions could err to the positive or err to the negative. And so this is something that good tools do, is not only say something to the effect of, you generated 1 billion events over the past month, or really that could happen in a day, and this system correlated out the 10 actionable events. And so you're showing a percentage of noise that you're blocking out, which is the biggest problem. But also to say, here's how many dollars you saved in uptime, in the amount of downtime that was reduced, and applying it to the business, not just to the IT aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So when I was working in Europe, I did a lot of work within within the manufacturing industry. And one of the things that kept coming up was IoT, right? So the implementation of different kinds of sensors on these large manufacturing tools. And I'm not going to talk about it too much, but one of the kind of essential things that came out of that was being able to predict maintenance schedules, right? Or have prediction of, well, this machine has been running for, you know, X amount of years. It's going to likely break down because, you know, this type of vibration has been happening for, you know, the last couple of months. And we know the data on that kind of vibration. Therefore, this tool, this machine is likely going to break down in 3 months. And yet your maintenance schedule is in 6 months. So we're predicting 3 months ahead of time, this tool machine needs maintenance. Is there some sort of aspect of predictability in AI ops, whether it's Gen 2 or maybe Gen 3, that you know of or that you can speak to?
Yeah, no, it's here already.
It's here already.
Okay. You know, the example that you gave is perfectly reiterating the point that every company has kind of had to become a technology company because one manufacturing company is doing that, another one's doing it the old school way, and they're going to be irrelevant in the not too distant future. Same is true in healthcare. Manufacturing and healthcare are probably two of the industries where these sensors and everything is IoT, everything is connected. And in healthcare, it's about lives instead of logistics. But this is just a truth. And so I absolutely think that that AI ops playing a role in these systems will give insights into predictability. So one of the things it's critical that it's everything's a closed loop system. That suppose there's no such thing as AI ops. I run a company's infrastructure. There's this problem. We track down the root cause. Now we know what happened. We remediated it, and so we learned that. So the next time it happens, I go, hey, I remember the last time this happened, and let's go check that. And it's probably that. And we fix it again. And now we have two data points to say, when that happens, it's really probably this thing. What AI ops is doing that is times billions. It's collecting all of that data and learning from it. And so now it's not just there's a problem. It's I can root cause a problem. It's I see a problem coming, exactly what you just described in the manufacturing example. And what we see with customers is a maturity model that follows exactly that. The first thing is, how do I get better at root causing problems? And then the second thing is, okay, how do I prevent these problems from happening in the first place?
Yeah, that's super interesting. I haven't published it yet, but I interviewed somebody on autonomous trucking, and that was also one of the main things that seemed to come about. I mean, I know it's one of the main trends with AI, but it's so much more interesting when you actually hear it from guests about like the specific cases of predictability from using some sort of AI tool. It really seems like something that's going to be much more powerful in the years ahead, right? Where you're able to predict whether it's these collapses or problems within AI infrastructure, or you know, you're able to predict how long it takes a truck to brake. So therefore, they're able to predict, oh, I got to brake now because there's, I don't know, some moose or something like that crossing the road. Yeah, it's super interesting. I think this predictability aspect of AI is going to be, I think, maybe more profound than what we're giving it credit right now. But yeah, you know.
I agree, and we're just scratching the surface of this right now. You know, I think the term AI ops came about in 2015 or 2016, and as I said, it was very loosely defined. You know, vendors rushed into the space and made it become a more tangible thing, but there aren't that many. You know, if you look at the market penetration, almost every company is looking into it. There are not very many mature AI ops deployments out there. And so imagine once you get, you know, 30, 40, 50% market penetration, meaning 30, 40, 50% of the companies in the world are using it in a production environment. Imagine how much more the machines will learn from those deployments.
Right.
And so this is where, instead of it being able to say, you have a problem, here's the root cause, it begins to learn what could be problematic and suggesting these things back to you. So it's not a human that says, hey, when maintenance is in 6 months, this is in 3 months. It is the machine being able to simply draw conclusions that are more like a human brain would draw.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And of course, it'll be, I mean, if not already, vastly more efficient and I guess better than any kind of human or any team of humans could be. And therefore, you see all those kind of efficiency gains for the business.
It is dramatically more accurate, precise. It is more obviously faster. Something interesting that people don't spend a lot of time thinking about: the human brain is incredibly efficient with power consumption. The amount of power that powers the human brain is a fraction of what computers require to generate the same computations. So I think you're really going to see a tipping point. This has improved over year by year. They continue to reduce the power consumption of the computers that run AI algorithms. When that gets closer to the human brain's capabilities, then that's going to be a huge tipping point, because currently it's still a challenge, that the amount of power required for these computations.
Right. Oh yeah, that's really, I hadn't thought about that. I'll have to have another guest on to discuss that point specifically. How about choosing the right AI ops platform? So you said that there weren't that many vendors or companies out there providing these to businesses, but from the options that are available, what, let's say somebody listening to this podcast runs a business and hears these kinds of issues, what's the type of route that they would take to deciding the right kind of AI ops tool to implement?
If I said that there were not very many vendors doing this, I mischaracterized that. There are plenty of them, and going back to the answer is AI ops. Now, what's the question? Many vendors are out there claiming to do AI ops. Here's what I really encourage anyone to do, and this is not specific to AI ops. Don't get enamored with the term. And don't get enamored with how the term is defined. This is all about the use cases for your environment. And does this thing that I'm about to purchase solve the problems that I need it to solve? And it's all about prioritizing use cases. So that's one of the things that people get caught up in. And somebody may say, we are going to go purchase an AI ops tool. And then they decide what AI ops means through whatever information they have, and then they're in, rather than mapping their evaluation to their use cases, they're mapping the evaluation to this defined set of things they think that AI ops should do. Does this vendor do this? Do they use these kind of algorithms? Do they provide these kinds of dashboards, etc.? When mostly that stuff may not matter. What they need is something that does X, Y, and Z for their environment and the problems that they're trying to solve. The other piece of advice that I would give to anyone implementing this kind of solution, this is not it's not a mobile app that you just download and install. It's not a plug and play kind of thing. This is enterprise software. And when you're making any kind of any enterprise software purchase, you should make sure that you fully trust the vendor that you're working with, and that they are going to be on that journey with you, because things are so complex these days, it never goes how you think it will. There are always challenges. And so what you want is a vendor that you can trust that's there with you. And this may seem like kind of pedestrian advice, but this turns out to matter than almost anything else. Anything in software can be fixed. If you're dealing with a vendor that's subpar, your project is not going to go the way you want it to go.
Yeah, I'm supporting a client right now for different things, but they're having to redo their entire digital tool that records. It's like a giant CRM plus, right? It does a number of other things, and they've been using this tool as kind of the basic infrastructure of their company for the last 8 months. And now the vendor is, not responding to emails, not getting back to them when they have a phone call. It's like, oh, we can't do that because this guy's on holiday, so we'll get back to you in 2 weeks. It's just a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. So I would parrot that advice for any organization out there that's looking for AI tool or for an AI ops or any other tool, right? It's trust the vendor and get used to working with them maybe beforehand if you can, or suss out if they're responsible, because communication between these organizations is sometimes more important than the actual tool that they're offering.
Yeah. Absolutely. We've had customers, you know, stand in a conference room or sit in a conference room and say, I'm not buying the software, I'm buying you.
Yeah.
And I need your phone number, and you're the one I'm going to call when things go wrong, and things will go wrong, and we just need to take care of it when it does.
Yeah. Yeah. This is also another trend within the whole AI movement or explosion right now that we're seeing, is that, you know, the tools are fascinating, but it almost enables more human to human connection, right? Because instead of just being focused on, say, all of the issues that you have, well, now you have just an AI ops tool to solve many of these IT problems, which enables you to interact with your client or your customer or your vendor a little bit more than maybe in the past. And of course, this goes into many other domains. Healthcare, I think, is the main one where people are going to be interacting less with their sheets in front of them and interacting much more with the nurses and the doctors.
I want to interject one thing. I think it's important to point this out. That's tangentially related. You know, people envision the machines are going to take over, and now will humans even need jobs anymore? What we actually see in the real world is our customers are not implementing AI ops so they can let people go, and you know, that goes to the bottom line. They're implementing AI ops, you know, as I said earlier, to automate all things that can be automated, and then have human brains working on things that require human brains. Mm-hmm. And so if you imagine that now you can, your IT operations is 50% more efficient, that means you're getting 50% more work done that is productive, not just care and feeding of your IT systems.
Yeah. That's something that I've come across many times, both in work, but also on the podcast. It's kind of like freeing up of the drudgery, if you will, the monotonous labor that many people have to go through. And then you have some sort of, whether it's AI or some other kind of digital tool, it can elevate their type of work. It doesn't necessarily replace them, does in some cases, but more often than not, it enables them to use kind of like higher cognitive faculties in the same type of work that they're doing, right? So their tasks shift to something maybe more interesting for them.
Yeah. In the world of an IT operations professional, they're commonly spending 30 to 40% of their time doing repetitive tasks that could be automated. Mm-hmm. And some may laugh at me because it's 80% or 90%, but it's common that it's 30 to 40% that they're repeating work that is just rote work that could be done by a computer.
Yeah. 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 And I guess for anybody listening, no matter what industry you're working in, if you're doing something that's repetitive, that's going to be in the crosshairs of AI over the next couple of years.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what industry you're in. That's kind of dead center. That's bullseye for AIs to take over.
It's efficiency that is required to keep up with your competitors. It's not a choice anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. So Trent, maybe let's look at the future of AI ops, right? So we're talking a little bit about, or we've been talking about what's happening today, a little bit of what's happening in the next 1 to 2 years. Can you give us a little bit of a vision for maybe 10 years out? That's typically what I like to look at the podcast, the time frame. I know it's really difficult, and I know it's probably not going to be the same, but I think it's interesting nonetheless to have people's minds think about these sorts of ideas. So
I wish I was Michio Kaku, would have something brilliant to say, but my brain doesn't work that way, because to not separate myself from reality, I do not believe I could give any reasonable prediction of what's going to happen in 10 years. Sure, in fact, sure. customers, you know, it used to be common that customers would say, I want to see your 2-year roadmap, what you're going to build over the next 2 years. That just becomes farcical because nobody knows what the world's going to look like in 2 years and what we're going to be building. And so you have to go quarter by quarter. That's just like a product management perspective of this. But, you know, in the not too distant future, I'll say this, that what we have now is, you know, we've talked about automation and root causing problems. Those are pretty tangible things. In the not too distant future, I think that everybody knows about ChatGPT. There's a concept in IT operations that's fairly new, but it's really catching on. And it's the term is being bastardized by vendors, of course, but it's observability. And okay, observability, while it sounds like it would be synonymous with visibility, it has come to mean something much more specific. Observability is observability tools do the AI ops part of this. It's kind of everything AI ops, but they're also providing this ChatGPT like window into that system where a human human being can ask questions of the system that are kind of unknown unknowns. You know, before we would say, you know, if this server CPU spikes, what applications are going to be affected? I think I gave that a similar example earlier. That's kind of trivial to know. It's the applications that are running on that server. It becomes more complicated with containerized applications, but it's still knowable. With observability, there's this idea that you can ask the system, if this server, I'm making up an example, if this server CPU is over 80% for more than 5 minutes, how will that impact the abandon rate of this shopping cart? And you're able to piece things together in such a way to ask a question that there's not a way that we would know. And the system is able to answer the question with, you know, some degree of probability, but that is something that is already in the works. And I would say in a couple of years' time, it's going to be very much a reality that the IT operations person can sit there and ask questions all day about different scenarios and will get very accurate answers.
And maybe as kind of a final question there, in the way in which these IT professionals are asking the questions, is the interface going to change? Is it going to be a little bit more like a chat bot, or are they going to have to kind of dig into the system? I can only imagine going through some of the data and some of these like dashboards that I would assume AI ops is showcasing them.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is the ChatGPT like interface. Okay. That currently, you can you get these beautiful dashboards that show enough data for you to try to piece things together. It just becomes so much and impossible to pull the signal out of the noise. And this is a way to, I mean, ChatGPT recently released a voice assistant. Yeah. So there's not even typing anymore. Yeah. It's just say it to the computer and the computer tells you the answer. It's like in the Star Trek, I'm not actually a big Trekkie, but in Star Trek, Picard can walk onto the deck. I don't even know if that's what they call it. And say on the bridge, computer, give me an update. And the update is the things that matter. You have this many missiles left. There are enemies this many miles away. You have this much fuel left. The next station is this far away. It's like just ask the basic question and get all of the relevant information. And we're not very far off from the artificial intelligence platforms being able to give you the relevant information without you even knowing the right questions to ask.
Right. Well, I think that's a perfect place to end the discussion where, you know, again, this trend of science fiction kind of starting to meet reality right now.
It is
absolutely fascinating, you know, certainly motivational and inspirational to think about. Where can people find you, reach out to you, look at the work that you're doing? I'll, of course, put that all up on the show notes, but... Great. Well, as we've been discussing, Trent, my computer just ran out of room and I had no idea that I was even close to running out of room. So I think that your entire discussion, all of the points that you're bringing up, would not just be relevant for larger organizations or even medium-sized organizations. It's definitely necessary for individuals here, because I've never had that happen before.
Universe definitely intervening.
Exactly. So as I asked, where can people follow you, and where can people reach out to you if they are so inclined?
Yeah, so the company I work for is called Zenos. It's Zenoss. You can go to zenos.com. I would check out a demo. If you ask for a demo, I think you're going to be really impressed. You can follow us on all the socials. And if you want to reach out to me directly, I'm just Trent Fitz on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on. I guess we'll say goodbye right now. Otherwise, my computer will run out of room again.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your time, Trent. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for listening to this week's Future Tech and Foresight podcast. If you like what you've heard here, there are, of course, a number of ways that you can support the podcast. The best way would be to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or give a rating on Spotify, which you can find a step-by-step explanation for on the futuretechandforesight.com website. Alternatively, feel free to leave a comment either on the episode show notes or the YouTube channel, where you can see video recordings of the interviews. And finally, if you are part of an organization that is aware of the disruptive and transformational impact that emerging and future technologies will bring and want to know more, please get in touch to hear about the strategic foresight services that we offer and how we can help future-proof your organization and take advantage of the phenomenal opportunities available to survive and thrive in the future.
A lot of future-shocked people and future-shocked institutions in our society are simply overwhelmed.
Once there is superintelligence, the fate of humanity may depend on what the superintelligence does.
Science fact is catching up to science fiction.
The first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention that humanity needs to make.
The only scarcity that will exist in the future is that which we decide to create ourselves as humans.
Within a 10-year design revolution, we can have all humanity living the highest and living anybody's ever known.
Progress is accelerating at an exponential pace, and it's going to reach a point where progress is so fast, it's going to be a singularity.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens.
Every single headline points to the birth pangs of a Type 1 civilization.